Sarah Gerard's debut novel was Binary Star. Her new work is a collection of essays called Sunshine State, in which she uses her experiences growing up in the Tampa Bay area to explore intimacy, religion, homelessness, incarceration, and more. Publishers Weekly called Gerard a virtuoso of language. So in the New York Times Book Review, the reviewer said, Florida is a supposedly fun place that has a lot of sadness clinging to it. Do you agree with that?
I think it's a very embattled place in certain ways. We think of Florida as both a tourist destination and, you know, the place where we hear some of our wildest news stories involving drugs and poverty and corruption. So I do think that's true. When I left Florida the first time when I was 18, it was only then that I realized how much I had bought into the fantasy of Florida. You know, my family frequently visited Disney World and also the beach communities where you have luxury condos and luxury hotels. And then you also have places like the Suncoast Seabird Sanctuary, which I think encapsulates this duality. You know, and I talk about this in the introduction to that essay, which is the title essay of the collection. I remembered it as a place of really unique encounters with wildlife, but beneath the surface, there was scandal brewing.
Let's take a step back and just talk about you were born and raised in Clearwater?
Largo. I was born in Clearwater, raised in Largo.
In Largo. Okay, yeah. So you're from this area.
Yeah.
And it was very formative to you.
Oh, absolutely.
And to who you are as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think when I was putting this essay collection together, at first my proposal didn't directly include Florida. Some of the essays were set here, but I didn't think of it as being the cohesive element of the collection. And then on the second draft of the proposal, I just kind of thought to myself, what do I have in my back pocket that could be a hook and also give me a lot of really rich material? And, growing up here, I think, how do I say this? A lot of people, when they leave, they think of escaping Florida. That's the word they use. Well, I escaped when I was, 20 or something. But I actually thought of it as I had been looking for an opportunity to return to the area and sort of grapple with, like you said, the ways that it formed me as a person.
You're a young writer, and you've written one book, which was a novel.
Mm-hmm.
Your first work was a novel,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, was a finalist for the Los Angeles Times Award for First Fiction and was on a lot of lists for best books of the year. So, but this is not enough. This isn't fiction. You completely changed your form of writing for this book. It's a collection of essays, Sunshine State's collection of essays. And you describe it in the book as sort of a mix of journalism and memoir.
Mm-hmm.
How did you decide to change over to a collection of essays for this collection?
I guess there are a couple of contributing factors. The first is that I don't really think that fiction and nonfiction are all that different. They're very porous. It's really a matter of degree and, how much do we want to adhere to capital T truth. Because Binary Star is a very autobiographical novel. The protagonist is anorexic. I when I was 22, went to rehab for anorexia, and I think that was the first book I had to write only because I needed to get that story out of the way. And I have continued since then writing about food and eating and body image, and a lot of people who struggle with food also struggle with self-harm, which I began doing when I was very young. Cutting myself, and so there are lots of contributing factors.
Does writing help?
Oh yeah. I wouldn't say that writing is a cure, but it can be therapeutic. It definitely forces me to be honest with myself about my behavior. If I can put something on the page in a radical way and just say, I refuse to be ashamed of this, then there's no reason for me to self-abuse.
And just going back to what you said a moment ago about truth with a capital T and how you don't know if there's much difference between fiction and nonfiction. Well, I'm in the reporting business, so that's something that I take really seriously.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see these essays? I have... One of the questions that I had for you are they true?
Oh, yeah. Every one of them is true. One of the essays, for instance, Going Diamond, it's about my parents 4 years in Amway when I was 7 to 11 years old. In that essay, the best way to get at the truth was to include sections of fiction. Like when we were in Amway, we would go on these, they're called dream building tours of mansions in the area.
Right. I wanted you to talk about that. Yeah. What is dream building?
It's a way of making your dreams material reality. Like if they feel very real, then you're more likely to achieve them, you know, if they feel like they're within reach. So we would visit mansions in the, at the time, still developing Bayou Club. We would visit car dealerships and test drive cars that were way out of our budget. We would tour luxury yachts, you know.
And they brought you along on all the dream building. So you were in on the Amway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The whole family was in on Amway. And it felt really normal to me at the time, you know. And it was only in retrospect when I began to write this collection and think about some odd parts of my childhood that I could return to and explore, that I began to second guess that enterprise of dream building, you know, like.
And that's so interesting because that is kind of a thread that you have running through this that applies, I think, very specifically to Florida, mm-hmm. which is the idea of people coming here with dreams mm-hmm. and fantasies. Mm-hmm. And you get into religion and cult-like religions.
My parents were a part of the New Thought movement, which was a kind of marriage of Christian Science and some Eastern thought.
How was it different than going to a Presbyterian church or something?
It's very focused on the power of thought to actualize reality. You know, positive affirmation and like denial of negative realities are supposed to bring about healing. They're supposed to have healing properties. So when I was growing up, there was a lot of emphasis placed on the way we talked about our lives and how much damage you can do with your words, or, you know, how you can heal yourself with positive affirmation alone.
And this kind of goes along with the Amway dream building too, though. I mean, that kind of mindset.
Right, exactly.
If you dream it, you can make it real.
Yeah. I think of those essays as being sort of companion pieces. You know, one follows from the other.
And tell me the name. The one about the Amway was called Diamonds?
Going Diamond.
Going Diamond.
Yeah, that's a term that Amway uses. Diamond was, when we were in Amway, Diamond was the highest level of achievement.
And so. Mother, Father, God mm-hmm. was about your experiences in this church.
Yeah, in the New Thought movement. And Mother, Father, God is actually an inversion of a common term in the New Thought movement. And Christian Science, actually, Father, Mother, God is the name that we use for God. We don't say just God. We say Father, Mother to acknowledge the feminine and the masculine.
Are you still practicing in that church?
No, I don't. But when I was writing the book, I did go to church every Sunday, and I reconnected with my childhood pastor, and I went through the church archives and found information about as much as I could about my family and the church at the time when we were still attending. We stopped going when I was about 12. And there's still, you know, there was a really deep emotional connection that I felt with the literature of the church. And, you know, of course, like the things that form us as children stay with us throughout our lives, you know. So I was hearing these prayers and they hit me on this really deep emotional level. And I just began crying sometimes in church, like, oh, my God, it's this familiar thing that I haven't heard in 20 years, you know, that still is so meaningful to me. I think it's also like there's a certain sadness in it because we really want to be hopeful. For me anyway, I mean, I really wanted to believe this was true and possible. And, you know, I guess it just occurred to me how kind of disillusioned I had become over the years since I stopped going to church.
Another thread that I find in these essays is this idea of rootlessness and transience. You have homelessness is something that you touch on mm-hmm. and kind of a precariousness of existence.
Yeah, homelessness is a thread that runs throughout the book. But I think also it's a part of this exploration of home. You know, Sunshine State was my way of returning to my home. And I began to think about what it means to have a home or not have a home and how we make our homes, where we find them accidentally sometimes. In the Mayor of Williams Park, the essay about homelessness, you know, a lot of the characters that I, well, a lot of the real people, but as a writer, I think of them as characters. The characters I encountered in that essay kind of made their ad hoc home in this church that is headed by G.W. Roll. So they find a home in each other and, you know, in this chosen family.
You did a tremendous amount of research for these essays.
Yeah, so I made 3 research trips to Florida in 2015 and 2016. and did a lot of research from afar as well. Some of the research included interviewing my parents and my childhood pastor and volunteering for 6 weeks at the Suncoast Seabird Sanctuary and simultaneously shadowing GW in his work.
And did you learn anything about your relationship with this state that surprised you?
You know, I guess I don't feel anymore like it's a place I needed to escape. It's always going to be home to me. It feels deeply familiar to me. Sometimes, you know, even when you travel to places you visited many times, for instance, when I was a kid, I went to Ohio a lot because it's where my father's family is from. It takes me a day or two to kind of adjust to that area again and find my way around. But I just got into Florida last night, flew into Tampa International Airport, and it was as if like no time had passed, you know, no period of adjustment at all. And even getting in the car this morning, I suddenly kind of halfway here realized like, oh, I'm in Florida right now. It didn't even faze me that I was in a new place, you know, and now I call New York City home. So, but this obviously is another home for me.
Walking out of the airport and having that humidity hit you, it always felt like, home. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was always a very strong feeling. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have you read in this first essay, BFF, it is about your childhood best friend. And we don't often see accounts of how intense this adolescent friendship between girls can be and how physical. And when it goes bad, it's so intense. It can be worse than breaking up with your first boyfriend.
If I could quantify what came between us, the cost of tuition. If I could quantify what came between us, the cost of your mother's one-bedroom rent subtracted from my parents' four-bedroom house in a gated neighborhood. If I could quantify what came between us, the cost of diapers, formula, hospital bills. The last time we spoke before this, we planned to get coffee and you never called me back. You never showed. You disappeared. That day, I wore a pink slip I'd turned into a dress, copycatting your style, which has always been effortless. You shinier, you prettier, you taller, you thinner, more popular. In middle school, you had friends and I had you. You made it so you were my only friend. Don't think I didn't know.
Wow. Have you reconnected with this person?
I actually have, a couple of months ago for my birthday. She, you know, we'd been, I think, or at least I can speak for myself, I had been periodically checking up on her online to see how she was doing and not reaching out, but just, you know, as people do, like lurking. But I never forgot her birthday and she never forgot my birthday. So on my birthday this year, she posted something on Instagram that was like a direct address to me. And she said, I read the essay, but just an excerpt. Happy birthday, Sarah. You were my first love.
She needs to read the whole thing.
Oh, she has now. Yeah.
What did she say?
She actually read it as I was sitting across from her at brunch. I sat there and watched her read it. And we had a 4-hour brunch. And not long ago, we were on the phone or maybe text messaging. And she said, you know, thank you for writing that. It was important for me to see myself this way.
You were not judgmental. I mean, you made it clear there were differences in money and class. You went to college. You had the money to do that. You lived in a nicer house. She became a stripper. You became a writer. But you kind of said you also weren't an angel. You were jealous. Mm-hmm. You weren't always a good friend. Mm-hmm. You made that kind of clear in a very, very sort of minimalistic language.
Yeah, she's doing really well now. She's always been an artist. I think that was part of what was so heartbreaking is that she, in a lot of ways, was more talented than me. You know, she's quicker, more bold. And now she has two children and is putting herself through school. And she's making art, which is amazing. She's amazing. She's a great person. So I'm glad we were able to reconnect.
So what are you writing now?
I'm writing a couple of things. I'm writing a novel, another novel that I hope to finish by the end of the year about love, or like anti-love, kind of. And I'm writing a long-form work of nonfiction about my friend's murder, which happened last year in Queens. Her murderer is going to trial soon, pleading insanity. So that's something I'm learning about, is what it means when somebody pleads insanity. And I'm co-authoring a book with my girlfriend. And I'm working on an investigative piece about a televangelist, which I'm writing for a newspaper.
Do you think of yourself as a journalist?
In certain ways, I think of myself as a writer. I think I use journalism as a tool sometimes. You know, I can report when I need to report.
In your research for these essays, you visited a hypnotherapist
yeah.
to help you dredge up some memories. What was that like?
Yeah, we went on a journey to the bottom of a lake together, and I pulled up over the next like couple of weeks, pulled up like 350 plus animals from my memory, many of them long forgotten, which, you know, there's something really emotional about that, too. Just, you know, the revelation that you have forgotten so much.
She helped you remember? Now,
yeah.
Physically, you weren't at the bottom of a lake together.
Oh, no, no. Yeah, we went on an imaginary journey to the bottom of a lake, and all of the bubbles that rose from the bottom of the lake to the surface had, like, animals inside them. And she, at the end of the session, said, okay, I put something in there for you so that you'll continue to remember even after you leave here today and as you're writing. So even while I was writing the piece, I was like, oh, shoot, I forgot this one. I have to plug this in here somewhere.
You told her specifically what you wanted to remember.
Yeah.
And then she helped you bring that out.
And she said, okay, well, if you want this to be a linear piece of writing, that's not how our session's going to go because that's not how memory works. Your memories are stored in these clusters that will come out in bursts, you know, and it'll be totally nonlinear all over the place because I might make an association between a cat that I met when I was 5 and a cat that I met when I was 25, you know, and they're connected by the fact of being cats. So,
and how can you be sure that it's memory and not imagination?
Because it's so detailed. You know, a lot of these animals have been corroborated by people who were there at the time, or, you know, they're people's domesticated animals. The way that I organized the piece was, you know, over these couple of weeks, I would be, like, driving along, and I'd have to pull over and write down a cluster of animals that came to me in a burst or dictate them into my phone. And then in order to write the piece, as I did, I had to plug them all into an Excel spreadsheet, place them in chronological order with as many details as I could in the columns, and turn each of these animals into a scene, and then reverse that chronological order. So it started with my 30th birthday and worked all the way back to my infancy.
And this was the essay Rabbit?
This was the essay Before an Inventory. It's an inventory. It tells the story of my life backwards through every animal I have formed a relationship with, or as many as I could recall. Actually, since writing the piece, I've continued to remember, and I'm a little frustrated that I can't revise the piece now. But it's written like a poem. So, you know, we were talking earlier about the sort of membrane between fiction and nonfiction, and I think there's also a very thin membrane between nonfiction and poetry, and also fiction and poetry. I think of writing as a continuum of form.
Because you use so many different forms in these essays.
Yeah.
That BFF that you read from is so different than Sunshine State, which is much more straightforward journalism.
Right. And it really depends upon the needs of the piece. You know, what does the content ask me to do? And, you know, what's the best way to present the content on the page? In the case of Before an Inventory, that just happened to be something that looked like poetry, but I really prefer to call it an essay. And it's both.
Sarah Gerard, the author of Sunshine State, a collection of essays, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.